This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasothi. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant, developmental pediatrician in the studio with us. We're discussing raising resilient children. You know, I've got some feedback, Dr. Rajini, on your shows, and some parents who are, you know, sort of my generation say, you know, Dr. Rajini's so kind. She always says we shouldn't scream at the kids. We shouldn't smack them. We always should, you know, use the positive approach to parenting. And all of us would talk about how, you know, we were smacked every now and again, and we turned out and we remembered that moment, and that made us better people. So we're going to have that discussion now. Our phone lines are open. How to raise resilient children? Are we bringing up spoiled children in this generation? The number to call is 7732900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome, Dr. Rajini. How are you today?
Fine, thank you, Meera. I'm just going to say something. If my kids are listening, they will tell you the human side of me does scream sometimes, okay, and smack sometimes as well.
But the professional you is sitting in the studio today. So we were just having a discussion off air about what, you know, smacking is okay, whacking is not, belting is a big no-no. But, you know, get involved in that conversation. Give us a call once again. 7732900 is the number to call us. So let's start with, you know, emotional health and resilience. Is there a really close correlation between the two?
Yeah, definitely, Meera. You know, I think one of the things to highlight is, I think we had some very alarming statistics last year, which the National Health Morbidity Survey looked at emotional health of teens. And, you know, the statistics show that one in five children show symptoms, well, teens show symptoms of depression, while two in five have symptoms of anxiety. And that tells you that, you know, emotionally, a lot of our teens are troubled for whatever reason, whether it's to do with pressures from home, pressures from school, peer pressure and relationship issues. So many things combined. And I think, you know, that's a bit of a wake-up call for our society to sort of look at how we parent our kids and, you know, what can we do better to equip our kids with the right emotional strength to be resilient. I mean, resilience is your ability to cope with any challenge that's thrown at you without sort of suffering a breakdown, whether it be physical, mental, etc.
So do you think then that we're seeing increasing numbers? I'm assuming that these are increasing numbers of individuals or young people with emotional health issues or mental health issues. Do you think that the fact that we've changed our parenting style has led to these higher numbers, in that this new wave of parenting style has resulted in less resilient children?
You know, I think it may not be parenting styles in the sense of, you know, when I think about parenting styles, you think about the very authoritarian type of, people refer to it as the tiger mum type of Asian parenting, versus the authoritarian where you have some boundaries, then you have the permissive parenting where you sort of let go and let the child decide and there are no boundaries. I think, you know, one of the things that I think has changed is parenting styles may not have changed a lot, but essentially, in the past, parenting children did not just involve parents. It involved the community. I do feel that in that sense, parents today have a lot more stress because they've lost that support that they have. And maybe that's also an impact on why we're seeing so many kids having emotional issues. And I think the way our lifestyles have changed, what we deem as important in schools has also changed from the days where you and I were growing up as well. So I think it's a combination of things, Meera.
Okay, so community is an interesting point. I can't deny that.
Yes.
That sort of community support has completely changed. We have domestic helpers now, literally bringing up our children to a very large extent. A lot of us now, both parents go to work. Mum's not really present, you know, as she probably did back in the day. But there is a difference between EQ and IQ. Yeah. What's the importance of EQ in a child's development? And if you talk about the workplace today, that's what all employers are talking about.
Exactly.
The kids coming out these days lack EQ. I mean, they're very clever. They're coming out with great degrees and, you know, academic achievements. But put them in a team, they're unable to actually perform. So what's happening there?
So I think, you know, this is where I think we tend to focus so much on building on the IQ, the three R's, getting the grades in school, getting to the so-called best universities, you know, sometimes even deciding on careers for our children because we feel they will be more successful in life if they choose those particular careers. All that sort of seems to have taken center stage, and we forget about the emotional development of that child, developing the other skills that are necessary to essentially get them through life beyond those academic years. And really, you know, when we talk about that, it starts from when they are very young, because, you know, if we look at it from a medical perspective or a scientific perspective, that brain in the first few years of life is so malleable. It can pick up so much. I mean, they actually say that you learn much more in the first 3 to 5 years of your life than you do through secondary school and university. So, you know, I think...
Wow.
Yeah, it's true. And if you look scientifically in terms of how the brain develops, you're born with those millions of cells, and in that first year those nerve cells start to grow in terms of length, size. They start to form connections with other areas of the brain, and this is how both EQ and IQ develop. And if we only hone in on one aspect of development, we forget about the other aspects of development in the first few years, we know that can have long-lasting impact. And one of the early studies were on the children from Romania who were in orphanages, and how, you know, they were put into orphanages, and a lot of them, when they were adopted into homes later on, continued to have a lot of emotional issues, a lot of issues with their development and behavior, not just from a learning perspective, but in terms of their adaptive skills in life, as a result of those early years of being deprived of, you know, emotional nurture.
Okay, so no orphanages really is the right way, don't you think?
No, yeah. No.
Yeah, let's get rid of our orphanages as much as we can. EQ is linked to resilience.
Yes.
So in these 5 years, if you don't build that EQ, then you're in trouble, really.
In a sense, yes. I mean, you know, the problem is for a lot of parents, they don't understand what it is they have to build, because in terms of IQ, they see that, oh, if my child can read, if my child can write, if my child can count and do basic arithmetic, my child's fine. Well, you know, it's beyond that. We know there are children who can do fantastic mathematics, but if you give them money to go to a shop to work out change and use that money, they're not able to, but yet they can tell you the square root of, I'm not even going to say a number because I might not come up with a number.
144, because I know the answer to that.
So, you know, you have kids like that, but they're not able to manage their money. Well, what use is that when you go out into the real world?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's much better to teach a child to use money even if you have to teach them how to use a calculator to work out what the change is going to be.
So can you give me examples between the ages of 1 to 5 or from birth to 5 where you feel parents are not on the ball?
Okay. So one of the things that we want to highlight from the Malaysian Pediatric Association and the Positive Parenting Group, which is a collaboration of health professional groups, is that, you know, we're using the model that was that the American Academy of Pediatrics highlighted, is building on the 7 C's. So we talk about the first 4 C's. In the first 5 years of life, what you need to be building on is your child's competence, your child's confidence, your child's ability to connect, and building on their character. So if I look at in terms of competence, you know, what are the basic skills that you need to build on in those first 5 years is getting your child to be independent in terms of looking after themselves. So your basic feeding, your basic dressing skills, toileting skills, and, you know, that's a stepwise process. And as they become more competent in being able to develop those skills in themselves, are they able to use some of those skills when they are in different settings? So being able to do that in your own home, being able to do that within, say, a daycare setting, being able to do that when they are staying in someone else's home or being looked after by a different carer, are they able to carry out those basic life skills? The next thing is how they develop social competencies. And do they have basic communication skills? You know, are they not just, even if they're not able to talk, are they able to communicate their needs through signs, through gestures? Or, you know, for some children, they have to use alternative communication methods. Are they able to do that in different settings as well, not just within the home, but in other community settings that they have to be in?
All of this before the age of 5.
Before the age of 5. And, you know, if we talk about building connection, it's about not just communicating and being able to develop communication skills within a family, which again is, I think, lacking, because a lot of families forget that they have to spend that time to work on talking to your kids from a young age, so they still talk to you when they are teenagers. But giving that child confidence to be able to connect with other people around them, you know? So that involves building that child's confidence as well, not being anxious when, you know, you go into a school setting, you know, and need to rely on mom being around to be able to communicate those needs effectively. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically also developing your child's moral values and, you know, a set of values where your child learns what's right and wrong. And that comes from modelling behaviours that they see around them.
Like how we drive.
Exactly.
And the language we use when we drive.
Littering.
Okay. Everybody guilty of that one. Yes, you were saying.
Yeah, so, you know, modelling.
Role modelling.
Yeah, role modelling.
Okay. Yeah. And this builds character.
Yes.
Connect. Is that one of the things as well?
Yes, connection. So, you know, if we start to communicate and develop these open lines of communication when our children are young, so that they understand that, you know, home is not just a physical secure environment, but home is also an emotionally secure environment. I can come home and tell my mom things without getting scolded. I can come home and tell my mom, teacher said my writing was bad today, without mommy turning around and saying, see, I told you should have practiced that 100 times. You know, I think In those first few years, we don't tend to talk about academics, but sometimes how we react in the first few years will determine how our children feel comfortable about whether or not they can tell us things as they get older and older.
But do you not think that we've all been guilty of this? We're Asians. We grew up with our parents speaking that kind of language to us.
Nobody said
try harder next time. Nobody said it's okay. It's good to fail now. Fall down now, you know, you learn now. Nobody said that to us.
That's true. That's true. Along the way, though, maybe, you know, sometimes I think, you know, when I reflect on my own upbringing, as much as, you know, there were high expectations put on in terms of how we performed or did, somewhere in there, my mum must have indirectly told me try harder and do better, because there were times when I was thinking, how am I going to hide that red history mark from her? But, you know, she always found out. So that, you know, I think there were those early connections. But, you know, I think for a lot of children, yes, you know, we all make mistakes, and along the way, if we learn from those mistakes, I think it's okay. And that's also one way to build character and confidence in our children. If we show them we've made mistakes and, you know, acknowledge our own misgivings and, you know, weaknesses at the right time, yes.
Okay, we'll come back and find out how tough love works to build resilience. I think many of us were exposed to that. I mean, in the field of sports, for an example, mm-hmm. they're pretty tough on you, yeah. and you excel, you learn. A lot of these incidents when you are, you know, doing sports on a competitive level and all that builds character. Mm-hmm. So question is, what constitutes tough love and where do you draw the line? Can you smack? Can you whack? I don't know. We'll find out. Give us a call. The number 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bright, formidable media. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician in the studio with me. We're discussing raising resilient children. If you have a question for her, give us a call. The number is 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio if you have any of your questions. I'm sure many of us actually do. I'm channeling a lot of them through the show. So you know what? Get in touch with us. We're happy to answer those questions. We spoke about tough love just now. Mm-hmm. Does it really help build resilient children, do you think? To a certain extent? I mean, how do we also include tough love into this mix of, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to sort of paint this picture that we need to sort of, you know, not be firm with our children. In fact, the research shows that parents who have an authoritative style of parenting, which actually is slightly different to an authoritarian parent in the sense that, yes, there are still firm boundaries, there are still times where, you know, there is a balance of punishments and rewards. You know, if you want to call it tough love, yes, it also involves a little bit of tough love in the sense that you have those high expectations, you do push your kids a little. But it's also important that it's also been shown in authoritative parenting that communication between parent and child is good. And I think that's one of the most important things, especially going through the teen years, that you have those good, solid communication lines so that your child can come to you for help. Because remember, building resilience is not something that, you know, only happens in the first 5 years. It's going through our lives. Even at our age now, we are still picking up skills. We are still falling down and making mistakes just so the next time we pick ourselves up again. So I think that's important to impart to parents as well, that, you know, it's a learning process. So I think discipline, tough love, yes, it is important. And I think there's also times where you have to balance that with, you know, giving that child a cuddle and a hug and saying, it's okay, you tried your best. And that's what matters most.
We all have grown up in different environments. Our values and belief system is very different. It's hard not to bring that and impose that on our children. What are some red flags, or possibly how do we keep ourselves in check to ensure that, you know, we don't do this? And, you know, as a result, push them away further in trying to build that relationship. As you said, you want them to come and talk to you.
Yeah.
That's not easy.
No.
Especially, you know, when you're very free with your words and when we get upset and we just, you know, go off the handle. So how would you advise parents to keep themselves in check when trying to build this relationship?
I think, you know, we all sometimes say things that we regret later. And the first thing is acknowledging that you've made a mistake with that and being very mindful of the words you use, the actions that you perform. And, you know, essentially being mindful of yourself, I think, is the first step. Now, I think one of the things that we had a bit of a dialogue about this the other day, and one of the things that came up was, what if you're a parent who, you know, you're a single mom living in a PPR flat, a low-cost flat, you're struggling with four or five children, you're trying to put food on the table, and you know, you have all that going for you. How, you know, the seven C's or building resilience is not something that's going to go through your mind. But that, I think, it's wrong to think of it that way. It's not, you know, everybody can build resilience. It's how you do it. Sometimes just by your child looking and being aware about why you are feeling that way or why you've just said that, makes them understand, okay, mum was, you know, stressed because she has a problem at work, but yet at the same time, she's trying to make sure that we have our dinner and help us with our homework. And sometimes it's about saying, I'm really sorry I said that. I've got a lot going on my plate now, but I still want to help you. And it shows our kids that, you know, okay, maybe I have to do something to help myself further and not rely on mum all the time to do my homework. And, you know, it's not something that clicks overnight. This is something that happens over years. And I think, you know, if you slip up now and again, it's fine. But use that as a learning experience for parents if that's happening.
Hey, you know, and if you can't even say it, then just send them a WhatsApp message, because I think it's better
Exactly, we have different lines of communication now, isn't it?
Better than not saying anything at all, I suppose. So I find that quite an effective tool, actually, because children now are very much on their gadgets and all of that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we communicate better via these modes of communication. In fact, some of the most memorable conversations or, you know, pouring out of feelings that I've had with my father is when I used to study abroad and he used to actually send me letters.
I was just going to say that.
Because we didn't have email at that time.
We didn't.
We didn't have WhatsApp or FaceTime or whatever, but we had to depend on snail mail. And we wrote our hearts out and they wrote what they were feeling. And we've never had conversations like that ever.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Except for in those forms.
Yeah.
So it was a good way of telling each other, actually, you know what, we love you, although we didn't say it at home.
But I think it is important that we tell our children we love them. I think, you know, I think it doesn't have to be always the words, but in the actions as well, by making little sacrifices and, you know, making them feel good on certain days. You know, and when I say, you know, it doesn't have to be a physical gift. It's actually our time that's more important for kids than what we actually do. And I learned something from a family that we knew, and they lived in, you know, this is a family where the parents only had education up to standard six. They, as a young couple, they moved to the city from a Felda town, you know, a Felda village, and they, because they thought they could have a better life. And, you know, they were in a PPR flat, and they had seven children. And we happened to go and visit them because it was the before their daughter got married. So we decided to go and visit them beforehand to give them the gift. And, you know, it was interesting to see how tiny that space was. But yet he said, whenever it was dinner time, everybody who was in the home physically at that time had to switch off all their devices, their phones, the TV had to be off, and they all had to sit down on the mat and they all had to eat together. He didn't care if they were physically present in that flat. They had to sit together and eat as a family. No excuses. And this is what we also tell parents nowadays when we talk about counseling families who have kids who are picky, when we talk about, you know, having family issues and children who are troubled. We say, at least have one meal a day together, or if you can't have that meal, spare your child at least 15 to 20 minutes of just you and your child without any other distractions, you know?
As simple as that.
Yeah. It doesn't have to take long. I mean, if you don't even have 15 minutes, 10 minutes maybe, you know? I think it's that one-on-one time or that family time that's very important for children. Not how much you buy them, where you take them on holidays. That's not so important.
Okay. Give us a call if you have a question for Dr. Rajini, 0377332900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. What are signs of poor emotional resilience, Dr. Rajini, and how do we pick those up?
You know, I think if you look at the statistics, sadly, I mean, these are also self-reported symptoms. I think when you have teens who, or even young children who start to act out behaviorally, that's one of the early warning signs that that child may have issues. And, you know, when I talk about acting out behaviorally, when they're having social issues with their peers, or teachers are telling you they're disruptive in the classroom, or you can see for yourself when you take your child out and they stand out, even though at home they may be the perfect angel and don't cause any problems. You know, so looking at their social behaviors is and how they cope with things. For example, if a child is hiding their homework or hiding their results from you, that's also an early warning sign that this child is obviously having issues with trying to communicate with you in terms of how they've done. And you know, it may not be, you may see that child strong in any other way, but the fact that they're lying to you is already telling you that somewhere along that line, the coping mechanism has gone wrong.
Okay. Why is it children seem to act up when they, you know, in those years where they hit puberty and moving into the teenagers? Very often they don't act up before that. And so you think everything's wonderful until they hit those age and that age frame. And then you realize, oh, what's going on here? And then you put the blame on hormones and everything. When actually you have contributed to a significant way in this sort of behavior. Is it ever too late though?
You know, it should never be too late. You cannot say somebody is gone past being helped, or a relationship is gone so bad that you can't do anything about it. I think you need to try some way or another. And if this is your child, you can never give up. If you give up, what else is there for that child? Why those teenagers? You know, it doesn't actually hit you suddenly. It usually creeps up on you, but you don't realize it sometimes. Yes, hormones have a part to play because it alters the way the brain maybe reacts, and, you know, having more testosterone flying about does make that give you that little bit more of an aggressive streak, either verbally or physically in some ways. I mean, we've all been through the slamming of the doors, the weeping and you don't love me, I'm going to take myself to my room. And
I want to run away. I'm running away tomorrow. Pack my bags.
So I think,
what would you do? I would say, here, go. Here's the door.
It's obviously not happened to you, Mira.
No, it hasn't. I do admit.
Right? Yeah. And you know, It's how you react to that as well. And I think rather than reacting negatively, you have to sit down and think, why did my child say that? You know, they always say the teens and the terrible twos are the same. Except that when you have the terrible twos, the kid lies down on the floor, kicks and screams, and there are no words usually. But as a teen, it's the words that hit you. And we often say, in some ways, you need to deal with it in a similar fashion. So you ignore those hurtful words and you don't react to them. But you go down to why those hurtful words were said and tackle the why before you tackle the what you should say instead. And I think when they say words like that, it's actually telling you, I need help. I want your attention. And maybe that's a little bit of what you need to give. And you know, start working on that relationship as well.
Okay. We have a question here from Alice. Alice is asking, how do I build resilience in my 5-year-old son who is on the autism spectrum? Mm-hmm. He has very little understanding and has high perseverance in his own way. But Alice says she does worry how he will grow up and what, you know, how he will actually turn out.
Thanks for that question, Alice. And you know, I think the same rules apply. I understand that in your child, possibly communication, especially verbal communication, may be difficult, but you have to try and find alternative ways that you can communicate with your child. So at least he's able to request what he wants. He can refuse if he doesn't want in an acceptable way rather than throwing a tantrum. He can maybe respond to some of your simple questions about his needs. So you need to work on that. And you may need a little bit of help from other people to build on that. But more importantly, you need to work on him being able to look after himself first. And this is often a challenge for children with developmental disorders, because how you train them to look after themselves may have to be a little bit different to children who are typically developing. I often have parents telling me, oh, how am I going to toilet train him if he can't talk and he can't tell me that he needs to go to the toilet? You can still do it by, you know, watching out for the little gestures, like when your child reaches for his trousers and starts to tug at it or pulls it down. So these are little signs that you can work on to aid with toileting. So work on building his basic self-care skills and how he's able to use those self-care skills in different settings as well.
Okay. We're discussing how to bring up resilient children with Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant, developmental pediatrician. We'll come back and find out a little bit more about the effects of social media and how we can balance being protective and encouraging and, you know, maintaining some sense of openness with our children. How do you balance all of it? And also, I'll give giving away each one of you 2 tickets to come to the BFM Health and Living Junior event, which is happening on Saturday, the 6th of October. It's titled Growing Up in the Digital Age, and you're going to be in 2 of the panels, Dr. Rajini. So all that coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant, developmental pediatrician in the studio. We are discussing raising resilient children. Very quickly, before we go into our next question, Dr. Rajini, we have a question here. Someone who's saying, we're a dual income family. The earliest that I could pick my kids from babysitter's house is about 8:30 p.m. By the time I shower, it's almost 10. I always feel bad. I'm not spending enough time. I fall asleep sometimes in the midst of bedtime story. This sounds so familiar. We leave the house at 6:30 in the morning for school run before heading to the office. I don't have any relatives in KL. I listen to them on the way to school and back from the nannies. I feel bad as there's always no time for them. My 9-year-old son is minor ADD, where he has less patience in everything. Hence, I always feel that I'm always in a rush calming him down. And are there any other ways to build resilience with him? This is a tough one.
I think this is
a typical scenario, actually.
Very much so. And you mentioned you picked him up from the babysitter at 8:30. Now, I sometimes tell parents, and you know, I totally understand, you know, having had longer working hours as my older two were growing up when they were younger. And it's tough, and you don't have time for yourselves. But one of the main things is that you do have to look after yourself first. Stop feeling guilty. I know it's hard, but you spend more energy feeling guilty, and you start to worry each time you do something. Are you doing it right? So I think you need to sit yourself down and see whether there's any chance of you trying to be able to get to that babysitter earlier than 8:30. You know, if it means you working through a lunch break maybe, or, you know, asking your boss for flexi hours, I'm not sure. Try those avenues first. Secondly, whatever time you have, that's the time you want to be using it, you know, as much as you can to talk and connect with your children. So sitting for an hour in the traffic or even half an hour in the traffic, that can be your 15 or 20 minutes together. And I would say at that point, switch off the music, you know, and just say, okay, let's just have 5 minutes of talking about our day. And talk about your day if your child is, you know, so don't question, talk about it. Because when we question our children all the time, they start to get a little bit fed up.
Yeah. How was school? Okay.
Exactly.
Do you have homework? Yes. Yeah.
So why don't you try talking about your day? You know, today was a great day. My boss wasn't angry with me. I managed to finish all my work on time, so I don't have to go finish off work after you go to bed. You know, talk about little things that maybe happened, funny things that happened in your office to your colleagues, or, you know, and if you have a bad day, tell them you've had a bad day as well. And hopefully then that becomes one way of connecting with your child, and your child may want to tell you more things when they hear about your own stories for the day. The second thing is always make sure when you have that, you know, you have such little time with them that all your screens are off, your phone is off, the radio is off, a lot of cars nowadays have got TV screens, you know, so there are no distractions and it's just you and your child. Or when you get home, before you start rushing into doing all the different things, maybe, yeah, you want to have a quick shower, but maybe have that little time to say a prayer together or read a story together. And if you know you're tired, don't pick that long storybook. Make up a little classic that you have in your head, or make up a story about, you know, an adventure with the kids, and get them involved in story time as well. So, you know, I think that little time that you spend every day is actually, the quality is more important than the quantity. So stop feeling guilty about not having the many hours of the day that you can, you know, that you want to spend with them, but use that little time that you have and maximize the quality is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And she mentioned something about her child having ADD and how she rushes through everything.
Yeah.
Well, you see, that's also an issue. When your child sees you rushing through everything and they have ADD, it sort of
perpetuates it
in a sense. And what you want to do is start slowing it down a little. Sometimes the laundry has to wait, you know, till the weekend, and you only do the essentials so that there's enough for that day. And you may have to start delegating to the partner, or, you know, and get the kids involved in chores as well. Because when you do chores together, you are also communicating and connecting, and you're building up their competencies as well as their character, because they're learning to contribute. And when we talk about the next level of 3Cs, you know, the contribution part of it, before you talk about contributing to the community, children need to learn to contribute within the home itself.
And when you talk about consequences of the lack of or poor emotional health, what are the long-term implications of that?
Long-term implications is they don't develop good coping skills. They don't learn to be able to control what happens to them, and they don't learn to be able to alter how they respond to the different challenges that face them. And, you know, you hear so much about children who are academically bright in their early years, and you don't hear about very much about some of them being successful later on in the real world. And you know, all of us have heard stories about geniuses with high IQs who've got into Oxford or Cambridge at the age of 13 and 14, but look at how many of them are successful in life in terms of the working world, and what contribution are they giving to society. And I think that's also what we need to base our measures on as well.
I think as parents, we're also very protective, and sometimes it's hard, it's very difficult to decide where those boundaries are.
Yes.
So how do you balance being protective and at the same time being, you encourage independence, you encourage openness? Oh, it's so difficult.
It is. And it starts from when they're little babies and toddlers. And, you know, the example I often give parents is, how is your child going to learn to cross the drain if, you know, you're always lifting him across the drain? If he doesn't fall at once and realize, ah, I need to move my body this way a little. So, you know, it's got to be within reason. I mean, you know, I'm not going to let that child cross a deep drain or a wide drain, but, you know, you want to sometimes put challenges in front of your children and see how they respond so that you can then help them to navigate their way through those challenges if they're struggling, so that later on they are able to deal with bigger challenges. So if you are so protective and you are going to determine that they're going to succeed no matter what happens later? You know, another example is, I guess, sending your kids for tuition after tuition so that they learn to answer questions and spot questions and answer questions. And then when they go to university, they start to struggle. And this is why we have plagiarism, you know, kids not being able to answer essay questions in universities, hence the mushrooming of, you know, all these essay writing companies. And I think the British universities are now mulling about the idea of banning them as well. Because we drill this, you must get those A's, but we forget that what's more important is the process of getting that A. You know, I think that's more important.
As simple as that, huh? Okay. There's one question here about the effects of social media on a child's EQ and emotional development. I'm going to save that for the 6th of October, Dr. Rajani.
Absolutely.
It's growing up in the digital age is really the theme for our Health and Living Junior event. And it's titled, as I said, Growing Up in the Digital Age. It's happening from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Connection at the Vertical, Bangsa South City. So you know what? If you WhatsApp me right now, we will give you 2 tickets each. That number to WhatsApp us now, 018-789-8899. All I need is your email address and your name, and we'll be happy to give you 2 tickets each. Dr. Rajani is going to be there. She's going to be on 2 panels. The first one titled, Is Your Child Struggling in School? And the last panel on, addiction, relationships, and all of that in relation to gadgets and your children. So you want to be there. The 2 ministers are going to be there, Dr. Zul and Hannah Yeo. So come and ask your questions in relation to your children. And would you have any final message for us on bringing up children in resilient children, Dr. Rajani?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we, as parents, we need to be very we need to be very aware about building these skills in our children so that they are able to face challenges in the future. And the Malaysian Pediatric Association has taken steps to try and promote this, because we do see that mental health and behavioural issues in younger children are now becoming increasingly prevalent. Parents are coming to clinics not because their kids have uncontrolled asthma or infectious diseases, but they're struggling with behavioral issues and things like that. And which is why we, through the Positive Parenting Group, we have started this initiative to create this awareness about building resilience through positive parenting. And for those of you who want to read more about it, you can log on to our positive parenting website, which is www.mypositiveparenting.org. And we do produce a magazine together with other health professional groups. And if you'd like a free copy, you can email freeppg/BFM. Just mention BFM. And if you then like that copy, you can go on to subscribe to more.
Fantastic. So see you all. Either get a copy of the Parenting Magazine or see you on Saturday, the 6th of October at the BFM Health and Living Junior again. Once again, send me your name and your email address and we'll give you two tickets, 018-789-8899. Thank you for joining us today. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician on growing up in bringing up resilient children on the bigger picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.